Capes on the Couch podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Dr. Issues is a psychiatrist, but he is not your psychiatrist and does not have knowledge of your individual situation. For any personal mental health concerns, please consult your own healthcare providers. For medical emergencies, please call 911 or the designated number in your area immediately. Remember that you are not alone and help is out there.
Hello and welcome to Capes on the Couch, where comics need counseling. I'm Anthony Sitko, joined once again by the esteemed Dr. Issues.
Hello. Insert witty sentence here. I don't really have anything this week.
Slacking. We need to get you a new writer. So thank you for listening. As always, you can find our shows on the Libsyn Network, on our website, capesonthecouch.live. We are available through Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and YouTube. We have a Twitter account, Capes on the Couch. We have a Facebook page, and capesonthecouch@gmail.com. If you would like to send us an email with questions about any of our upcoming shows, real quick, we're just going to plug next week. We have Rorschach, and then the week after that, April 25th is our big special Infinity War episode. We're going to be talking the Mad Titan himself, Thanos. So get your questions in now if you have any inquiries about Rorschach or particularly about Thanos. We really kind of want to blow that one out in advance of Avengers Infinity War coming out that week. But this week, we're a little behind as far as trying to tie in with media releases, but this week's episode focuses on Jessica Jones.
Yes, I'm sure the fact that we were off by a week is going to affect our contract with Marvel, which I hope we have sometime in the future, because that's a lot more money than what we're getting now.
Yeah, well, you know, we got the retweet from Bill Sienkiewicz. He likes us. He plugged us. So that's super, super awesome. Big fan of Bill and his work, particularly after the Moon Knight episode. So as I said, this week's episode, Jessica Jones, she was introduced in Alias, created by Brian Michael Bendis. Say what you will about Brian Michael Bendis. He is a good writer when he wants to be, when he needs to be. So he was the writer on Alias, which was part of the Marvel Max imprint, which was their R-rated releases and allowed them to get away with stuff that they otherwise would not normally be able to do or say in the regular 616 universe. So that was kind of an interesting book. So she was actually born Jessica Campbell, was her birth name. And she was a classmate of Peter Parker's, and she was present when he got bit by the radioactive spider because they needed to retcon her in somewhere. Then she was in the car with her parents when they were struck by a truck that was carrying a whole bunch of chemicals. So the rest of her family dies. Now she's in a coma for several months. She comes out of it. She ends up adopted by the Jones family. And here's where she discovers that she has super strength, not full invulnerability, but she can certainly take a beating more so than your average person, and she can fly. So she becomes sort of inspired by Spider-Man and the various heroes, and so she decides to become Jewel, except nobody really knows who Jewel was, and she was just sort of this no-name hero until she met up with Zebediah Kilgrave, aka the Purple Man, and he sort of used her as his pawn for a while, and she was under his spell and mind control, and he sent her to kill Daredevil, but she was rescued by Carol Danvers, who she later becomes very good friends with. And then she dates Scott Lang, and then she dates Luke Cage, and then she joins the Daily Bugle as a superhero consultant. And on a side note, that was some really fun interactions with her and J. Jonah Jameson, who sort of had to admit that even though he really, really hated superheroes and that costume Spider-Man, he's a menace. That's my piss poor J.K. Simmons impression, that it was hurting the paper sale, so he had to bite his tongue. So he brought her on board to sort of report on the superhero beat. So then she has a baby with Luke Cage. They get married. And then during the Civil War, they initially side with Cap on the anti-registration side until they're attacked by the Hood. Then Jessica says, oh, my God, we have a baby. I need to take care of my kid. And she sides with Tony, mostly to protect her child. After Civil War is over, then they rejoin the new Avengers, but then she quits to protect, again, Danielle, and we see this sort of as a recurring theme, and Squirrel Girl becomes the nanny.
Yeah, are you trying to tell me that the life of one's child really starts to influence all of their major decisions in life? I seem to get that here. Is that accurate?
You're the one with the kid.
Yes, I guess that's true. I don't know. Sometimes I leave her out on the curb and my wife doesn't seem to care. Yeah, whatever.
That doesn't surprise me. So then she joins the Defenders during the Secret Empire event. And of course, the Defenders are not the Doctor Strange, Hulk, Namor team that they have been for decades, but instead the Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Daredevil, Jessica Jones team, because synergy between the comics and live action stuff. And then she gets her own series again, I guess, to further tie in with the Netflix series. She kind of helps Maria Hill evade some S.H.I.E.L.D. assassins. She reconciles with Luke. And honestly, this at least from reading the New Avengers, where her and Luke were very happy and they had a solid and stable relationship and marriage. And then to see the version of Jessica that was in the solo series, where she's on her own, she's basically that self-destructive mindset again, and she's on the outs with Luke. It just, at least to me, seemed like a step backwards for the character from all the development that she had, just so we could say, oh, we're going to put her in this comic that she's down in the dumps and she's kind of an alcoholic, etc., just because that's the version that Kristen Ritter plays in the Netflix series. Because again, as we've mentioned a couple of times, Marvel comics always have to seem to match whatever the live action is doing, because God forbid people think that the comics and the movies are two separate things.
Well, I certainly do agree that that's the reason they did it. I don't think it has to be that far off than what happens in many people's lives. Relationships change over time, sometimes not for the better. People separate, they get back together, they, you know, have permanent falling outs even. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to go down a path of destruction, but those transitions to being healthier are going to be pretty darn difficult. So, you know, I don't necessarily find that as much of a problem with the comics as a whole. I think that it was fortuitous that the Netflix series took off as well as it did. I'd be very interested to see what would have happened if basically they, you know, put out those episodes and they didn't do as well as they had anticipated. You know, maybe we get a whole different ballgame.
Well, I know that the reason ultimately that they went that route, that she was hiding from Luke and that she was hiding Danielle, et cetera, was because her and Carol were working a super, super secret operation that basically required her to go on the run, because it was the only way that they could draw the woman out of hiding who wanted to hire Jessica to bring her Carol. It was a whole series of events that they had planned out, and it required Jessica to be the standoffish person that she was. In that sense, it made sense within the story. It just rubbed a lot of the people the wrong way that all of a sudden she was just willing to forego everything for this op. It just, like I said, after having read the New Avengers and The Pulse, et cetera, where we see a functional and happy Jessica, she returns back to this dour, self-destructive version that is antisocial and, you know, misanthropic and pushes people away just for the sake of the story. I just feel like Bendis did it because that's the version of Jessica that he had initially written, and then the character developed without him. So he kind of pulled a Chris Claremont and said, well, I'm just going to ignore everything that I didn't write and bring her back to where I want her to be. Just sort of my two cents on it.
Wow. I'll be honest. I hadn't considered it that way. That's an excellent point. Wow. That's the power of creative license. I'm impressed, because I'll admit, based on my background, the things that I always think about is, how does a person in character change over time, not thinking about the creators of the character and how they're going to influence that change? That's a different spin that I'll admit I have kind of a mental block about. So I appreciate you bringing that to the forefront. I just hadn't considered it.
Well, this ties in very well with actually the first question that we have from Paul.
Woohoo!
Paul wants to know, why does Jessica suppress or ignore her powers, and why does she become self-destructive? So I guess we're just going to jump right into the issues of the background on Jessica and Doc. Why does someone like Jessica, who is given these powers, to use, I guess, the TV tropes lingo, flying brick, why does she have these abilities and say, I don't want to use them or rarely use them. And mind you, again, we are focused on the comic version of the character. We can certainly address the Netflix version where necessary, but we're trying to stay focused on the comics version.
Okay, I'm going to take some people on a ride here. Believe me, it is going to answer the question. For everyone that's listening right now, raise your hand. And yes, this goes for you too, Anthony. How many of you have won a lottery of $1 million or more? Somehow, I don't think anybody's raised their hand. And if you have, then congratulations.
If you have, congratulations. And would you like to sponsor this program?
Okay. The reason I'm bringing that up, I could have brought up any number of fortuitous random events, things that you had zero control over that just happened in your lifetime. We could think of any number of those things. Where you're born in this world, you know, what your gender is, what your race is, lots of different issues that I apologize. I know I use issues a lot. I don't know. It has to do with my name. But the point being, when something happens that most of us would be considered a fortuitous event, and especially if it was unexpected and totally spontaneous and of large magnitude, time and time again, there is evidence that we do not handle those situations as humans very well. If you ask most people that have won Powerball, that have won large million-dollar sums and did not have a preset plan for what to do with that money, they lose a lot of it. Heck, you don't even have to go to the lottery. How many athletes, how many movie stars, how many rock stars, how many people come into large sums of money that they didn't originally anticipate, end up losing it because, well, we're basically of a scarcity mindset. She hit the jackpot with this. Are you kidding me? Super strength? Flying? Really? That's on its surface fantastic. But what was her guide? I mean, yes, she had the observation of Spider-Man. She didn't know Peter Parker. I mean, she knew of him. They went to the same school. But I mean, my goodness, there's no blueprint for this. At least not in her world, not in the way she existed.
And to add to that point, the same accident that ultimately gave her her powers cost her her parents and her family. So
that's something that I was going to get to next. But yeah, you know, when you bring it up, I don't know which one comes to mind for her first. But the point being, she has to deal with both and she has to deal with it immediately. Oh, and by the way, she didn't have time to process it because, as we've already established, she was in a coma to begin with. So she basically got a nice little reset button to her brain that basically, as soon as she woke up, she had to make a decision. You know, it wasn't someone externally telling her, by the way, you have to choose what to do with these things. It's you have to survive now. So what's your choice? And initially, as with most, I'll go back to the, you know, the thing that we all can understand, as with most people that come into a lot of money immediately, it's like, woohoo, I get to spend everything I have. All right, great. And things are going to be wonderful. In her case, I can be a superhero. I can use my powers and all of that. But once again, what happens after the initial euphoria of some type of situation like that happens? Well, you're going to start to have unforeseen consequences. This is all done without a plan. Not because she's a horrible planner or anything like that. It's because it's human nature. She went through the entire process that we all go through when we have what I call a windfall. And I know I'm still not addressing the tragedy that's involved with this, but I'm saying that that part was set up to fail to begin with. It's just the way that we're hardwired. We don't do well with immediate abundance. Now, after that, okay, initial random success, likely future failure because of a lack of humans' ability to plan, you have to deal with the fact that something bad has happened and people that were basically the most important part of you, the ones that were supposed to be supporting you and teaching you. Heaven forbid her parents had survived this. You know, maybe they could have given some guidance, but they, you know, they couldn't. She was adopted. That's fine. You know, adoption is a wonderful thing when it comes to reestablishing the level of security, the level of comfort, the level of teaching that a child needs. That's fine. It's still not going to replace the fact that the original people are gone. From that standpoint, you're not going to deal with guilt well. This is a situation where more often than not, and once again, this is irrational because humans, as we are learning week after week, are not exactly the most rational all the time. She's going to feel guilt, and somehow many people feel at fault. Was she the one that caused this accident? Everyone together. No! But does that matter to her brain since she experienced it and she has this huge sense of loss? Yes! Okay, so now she has a situation where the thing that she was given is directly tied with the things that she's lost. And by the way, she didn't handle them well to begin with, and it didn't have good results. So what conclusion would you come to? All the evidence that she's been getting is this is actually not helping at all. This is not good. So now she's had a burden on top of a burden. It's not even a balance anymore. It's way out of whack. So from that point forward, can she take away her powers? I mean, Marvel has plenty of evidence that, you know, plenty of people do this sort of thing, but that's not my point. She personally can't do that. So why bother? If you can't actually use it, just try and ignore it. Seems logical on the surface. So what else are you going to do? She's got life. She has to make a living. She has to have something to do. She definitely is still a human being. She definitely still has to get a job. She has to put food on the table. She has to, you know, she has to pay her bills, all those things. So she basically goes on with her life. Once again, I'll go back to my original analogy. I'll make it simple. If you had $1 million and you squandered it, what are you going to do next? You going to play the lottery again? Well, maybe, but you know you're probably not going to win again. So what do? You go back to work. You take the shame. I had this opportunity. I blew it. Oh, well. Well, some people say, oh, well. Some people lament on it for the rest of their lives. Some people just dust it off and try and do better than they did the first time. Everyone handles it differently. But once again, that's just a part of life. So when it comes to why would she suppress or ignore her powers? Well, because that's pretty much what any human would do if they didn't handle it the right way the first time. You know, and why does she become self-destructive? Because that's one of the unfortunate options for someone that's made many mistakes and doesn't see any other way to handle life.
I guess the lottery analogy really just kind of sums all that up. Now, I'm going to take that and add on to it because in dealing additionally with all of the things that you discussed, she was the pawn of the Purple Man for close to a year. He made her do all manner of things, and this was done exquisitely well in the Netflix series. Season one, David Tennant as Kilgrave was just amazingly effective at portraying a man who has all the power to make people do whatever it is that he wants them to do and never have to worry about the consequences. And it was so delightfully trollish of him, the way he handled everything. But back to Jessica, she was made to do a number of things that she would not have otherwise done had she obviously been in control of her faculties. So I would surmise that she has some sort of PTSD and or just trauma from reliving the memories, because even though she was not in control of herself while Purple Man was manipulating her, she certainly remembers everything that she did. And she's going to remember all the things that she did negatively, all the people that she hurt, all the things that she had to do to herself or that Purple Man did to her. That's going to replay over and over in her mind on a daily basis, I would say. And Doc, I don't know if you want to take that and expound upon it.
Okay, what I have here, and you know I do this
from
time to time.
You're going to read the DSM, aren't you?
Oh, wow. It says, if you read my mind, and by reading my mind, I mean noting
that I
have...
I see the phone in your hand.
Yeah, having the actual criteria right here. And this is nothing special, folks. You can look this up online as well, okay?
This is DSM-4 or 5?
This is actually DSM-5, and I know I referenced DSM-4 in a previous episode. I did mean DSM-5. I am up to date. I am so sorry, people. I am not that ignorant. I'll just highlight a few of the criteria. Exposure to actual or threatened death, serious injury, or sexual violence in one or more of the following ways. Directly experiencing the traumatic events. Oh boy, did she ever. witnessing in person the events as it occurred to others. Now this, I'm actually going to say, is a spin on it because, as Anthony pointed out, she wasn't exactly in control. So... yes, she physically is the one responsible, but it wasn't as if she did this of her own volition.
It was almost like she was watching a movie mm-hmm. through her own eyes.
Exactly.
I think we've all been there. We've all had moments where we just feel that we're mm-hmm. going through the motions. Anyway, continue.
Well, this next one actually points to the fact that she was primed to have PTSD. Learning that a traumatic event occurred to a close family member or close friend. In cases of actual or threatened death of a family member or friend, the events must have been violent or accidental. Uh-oh.
I think the car accident qualifies.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay. And then the actual symptoms of PTSD itself. Recurrent, involuntary, or intrusive, distressing memories of the traumatic events. Recurrent, distressing dreams. I love how they use the term dreams because there was an actual academic debate on if you use the term nightmare, does it have to give a negative connotation because some people actually enjoyed if it was sexual trauma and they had a wet dream. And okay, anyway, I'm not going to get too far into that. Dissociative reactions or flashbacks in which the individual basically and every movie or TV show has their own version of this. We all know what that is, okay, when we say flashback. Persistent avoidance of stimuli associated with the traumatic events. In other words, you're trying not to recreate exactly what happened, or if you're in a similar scenario, then you start to get very intense. Basically, you become hypervigilant. As anyone has said that's played major athletics or even flag football, keep your head on a swivel. You always want to know what's going on around you at all times because danger could be coming from anywhere. And then hearkening back to your favorite Moon Knight, you know, sometimes the level of dissociation, you almost feel like you're having an out of body experience. You don't know, you know, what's going on. You might get to the point where you completely dissociate and you just take yourself out of the picture and you won't remember a thing. That's the most extreme version. But I think based on what, you know, we've discussed, I think Jessica would qualify for PTSD. I think that matches up pretty well, unfortunately for her.
Now, moving forward, once we see her out of Purple Man's grasp and she opens up Alias Investigations, I think this is a very key thing. And it really goes to her characterization and her psyche that it seems like she's more focused on investigating others than any sort of introspection or examining herself. Now, what would lead a person to do that and to have that kind of a mindset where I'm not going to focus on me and the fact that I don't have anything in my life going well. I'm just going to focus on you and all of your problems. Is that just a projection or is there more to it than that?
Thank you for using the term projection. That's an impressive term. Basically, that's one type of coping mechanism for dealing with trauma. In this case, as long as she's successful in one area of life or in multiple areas of life, it doesn't matter what her personal failings are. In this case, she has a few things to pick from. We have examples of her, you know, being involved in different businesses, having different jobs, and doing quite well at them, no matter what the description. I mean, personality-wise, she may be snarky, she may be a bit of a jerk, whatever the case may be. The point is she gets the job done, and everybody appreciates someone that gets the job done. We could talk about interpersonal. She, you know, is able to form pretty positive relationships. The one with Luke Cage is a great example of that. You've already pointed out she's, you know, they both seem to have a great, loving, understanding, fantastic cohabitation ability that ultimately manifests its love in her daughter, you know, which is not something that should be taken lightly. She clearly cares for her daughter. She is willing to do anything for her daughter. She's willing to make ultimate sacrifices in multiple areas of her life for her daughter. All of these things that I'm talking about are what we consider to be positives. And as long as you don't have to have a massive circle of people that are constantly investigating your personal life, that's fine. You know, as a matter of fact, in modern terms, I would say that's the Facebook phenomenon or the Instagram phenomenon. How many people do you know have all of these great selfies or these great pictures of where they're going or who they're meeting or what they're eating for dinner or what they're doing and all this stuff? And you think they're living these fantastic lives and none of it has to do with what they're actually feeling. You don't know what their emotions are. You don't know what their fears are. You don't know what's depressing them. You don't know how bad their day was. None of it. None of it comes across. So in other words, you create all of these great, beautiful murals to your life, these wonderful pictures that are actually a just gigantic wall that's a barrier to everything else. And in all honesty, people live like this indefinitely. There's no rule that says that you have to continue to improve yourself internally. As long as society is, you know, deeming that what you're doing is appropriate, you, in other words, you could go to work every day or your family still loves you. You know, all those things. As long as they go, you can do that in perpetuity, you know, but that the good fortune may run out in the sense that those same factors at some point are going to break down if the person ultimately can't live with themselves. You know, because I know we've touched on this. I think that was the Eddie Brock episode. But it's like no matter where you go, there you are. No matter what you're doing, you're still there. So you can create everything well outside of you, but you're still with yourself 24/7.
And it's funny you mentioned social media because I've seen it and I'm going to horribly misquote it or paraphrase it. But the fact that we compare everyone else's highlight reels to our works in progress, I think was the phrase that was used. And the fact that, as you said, we look and say, oh, this person did this today and that person did that. And that's so awesome. And I'm just sitting here, you know, in my pajamas, or I'm just, you know, I haven't showered today, or I look like a mess, or I'm so exhausted. And then it creates this jealousy factor when there's nothing legitimately to be jealous of. And I'm sure in instances it is, people do post these things because they legitimately are excited and want to share it with others. But there is that sense that we put up this facade of our best self to the world so that no one has to poke and prod and find all of our inner demons. And I think Jessica does that very well. And that by focusing on trying to nitpick and find all the flaws in this one, is this person cheating? Is this person a murderer? Is this person really who they say they are? That she can avoid that sense of introspection and have to, you know, deal with her own demons, of which there are many. So moving forward now into the treatment side of things, starting again with in-universe, as we always do, if you were a psychiatrist, and I'm going to bring this back to someone like when we discussed Tony Stark a couple of weeks ago, here's a person who does have positive contributions and does ultimately do good for the community, but still has a lot of inner turmoil and problems that they need to deal with. So how would you deal with Jessica's particular problems while still enabling her to be a net positive for the world?
I become best friends with Luke Cage. That may sound like a non sequitur. That's not my intention. What I mean is...
Well, I think that's a pretty cool plan regardless.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one of my goals in life, isn't it yours? No, what I mean is... Since Jessica is so closed off and so defensive, I need to find a proper in. I need someone that she trusts, you know, as almost as a sounding board, as someone that, for example, if I can get his recommendation, like, hey, this is a cool guy, I think he can help you, something like that, I think that would go a long way, as opposed to just the cold call of, hey, you're messed up, I'm going to help you. I don't think that's going to go over well.
I don't think that goes over well with anybody, certainly not with a woman who can punch you through a brick wall.
Okay, so that would be my first tactic. Then from there, once I get in her temporary good graces, because that's the other thing with a lot of these people, building trust is a very tentative thing. Yeah, realize that you have them for that split second. You don't have them for a long period of time in terms of them fully trusting you. I would try and just develop that rapport to the point where she's willing to talk about anyone. I mean, honestly, pick any one of the issues that she wants to discuss. If she wants to go back to the child, you know, to her childhood, great. If she wants to talk about what happened with being mind controlled, okay. If she wants to talk about her current situation, fine. That's an open book. Whatever one topic, and that's the other part, keeping it to one topic at a time, which is something that, you know, as you could tell from this podcast, I have trouble doing myself. That would be the number one thing. In terms of treating PTSD, that's, I hate to say bread and butter. I mentioned some techniques before with Moon Knight and the dissociative identity disorder, the EMDR therapy. I'm not going to rehash that exact same thing over again. But the point being, I would be willing to discuss with her basically how far is she willing to go? Is she willing? And wait a minute. I just remembered, if we're talking in universe, she has some protection thanks to Jean Grey against mind control. And specifically, she had to learn how to activate that protection herself. That's an incredible skill. As a psychiatrist in universe, I would think to myself, my goodness, why would I have to do this on my own? I'm talking, I get some big guns here. If it's not Jean Grey, maybe it's Professor X. Maybe it's Psylocke. I need someone that speaks on that level. I can't read minds. I don't have any of those powers. It would be great if I had someone like that to help me with this, because they could start probing in ways that I can't, and I would take full advantage of that. I think that that would probably do more good for her with the protection that she has, because if it got too intense for her, she could regulate it. She could say, okay, time out. This isn't going to work right now. Great. See you next session. I think that's the one unique thing I could do in universe that I can't do out of universe. And to be honest with you, I realize that's going to be almost like a deus ex machina kind of situation where I could probably use that for just about every case. But no, specific to her, that's what I'm saying.
Okay. I guess that kind of makes sense. And, you know, it's funny. We hadn't really addressed that before with any of the other characters, the ability of the other heroes that have telekinetic power or telepathic powers, I should say.
Yeah, because I don't need them to move stuff around in the office, man. That's what telekinesis is. Get it right.
Right, right, right. I forgot. Listen, I misspoke. It happens to the best of us. And it also happens to you. So telepathic abilities would certainly in universe be incredibly helpful. Moving out of universe now, and I'm sure that given a lot of the issues that Jessica has, you in your professional experience have certainly dealt with people with a number, if not each and every single one of these problems, at the very least, a vast majority of them, even just in one person. And I know that sometimes it's difficult for us to envision a authentic individual, a real life person with X, Y, and Z neuroses or mental disorders, but given what Jessica has gone through, the self-loathing and survivor's guilt and PTSD, et cetera, I don't think it's that much of a stretch to find that there are people out there with these specific issues. How would you deal with that in a real person, given that you can't obviously just call upon Professor X and you know, put his finger to his temple? And are we talking McAvoy or Stewart, though?
Oh, my God. So completely ignoring that last comment, for PTSD, you can't just lump them all together. It depends on the type of trauma and where they experienced it. The first thing that most people think of are you know, veterans, combat experience, but also first responders. But honestly, any trauma can do it. Something that I haven't mentioned that much, with the exception of substance treatment, and that's more group-oriented therapies, basically survivors of events can be incredibly helpful. Now, not everybody is a strong candidate for this. And honestly, if we're talking someone like Jessica Jones out of the universe, she may not. I mean, and most people will give you that instant feedback. If they're in a group that has had similar experiences and maybe one of them is telling part of their story and that person walks out, you don't stop them. Having said that, if they really do feel like they belong, like they're a part of that group and they could benefit from it, then you start forming the type of life, basically lifelong bonds with people that remind you that you're not alone, and they can give you their own experiences and techniques on how they get through each day with whatever it may be, their flashbacks, their nightmares, or, you know, what happens when someone that looks like the person that was, you know, responsible for the trauma comes by, that sort of thing.
Well, we did see Jessica in the first season, and I know, again, we focus primarily on the comics, but I'm going to use this moment to bring up the Netflix series. She does go to the Kilgrave survivors, victims group, what you want to call it, with the other people who have been impacted and mind controlled by Kilgrave. We see that in some senses it works for her on a personal level. And then, of course, the spoiler alert, the crowd kind of turns on her because they realize that you had the ability to stop Kilgrave and you didn't, or you have him captured. I forget exactly how it happened, but they turn on her, which, of course, is incredibly traumatic from the perspective of someone who trusts a group or and has trust issues and opens up. Go back to the alcoholism thing, because you mentioned substance abuse. That's one thing that we didn't really discuss, only because I just think that it's symptomatic of all the other things. And really, I don't want to belabor it too much, the fact that she uses alcohol as a crutch, both in the comics and in the Netflix series, that she's constantly drinking.
Yeah, I will say that it's much better integrated compared to the way it was done with Tony Stark. With Tony Stark, it literally was a story arc, and it was barely touched on in the cinematic universe, as opposed to just this, in my opinion, much more even-handed view of how an underlying use of substances can be a bit of a crutch, as you've already mentioned, but not necessarily something that, if it's not getting to the level of the person thinking or having truly demonstrated that it is causing constant problems or damage in their life, you don't automatically bring it to the forefront until that person is ready to deal with it. In other words, once we get all this other stuff out of the way, hey, by the way, did you know that you drink a lot? It really is that conversational at times. Or maybe that person really did kick it up a notch and they come in intoxicated. Okay, now we go back to, as I had said in the Stark episode, basically, okay, now we have to address that first. It's always a situation where we have to gauge what's most important at any given time.
Interesting. Which I imagine is one of the things that you learn throughout your training, is how to gauge what the primary issue is, which ones are symptoms of other issues, and which ones are the underlying ones, because at least from my perspective, I imagine you would want to treat the underlying ones, because if you treat the quote unquote disease, then the symptoms go away, instead of spending your time trying to catch all the symptoms. If you address the underlying thing that causes the drinking or the et cetera, then you spend less time focusing on the, you know, on the symptoms.
So I see you've been listening to me. All right.
Well, you know, I do try to pay attention. I got the headphones on, so.
So to get back to treatment, comprehensively, we would look at medications depending on the types of symptoms that she has. Could be if she's having nightmares, there are specific medications for that. Something called alpha blockers, which directly affects the epinephrine and norepinephrine systems of your nervous system, in terms of regulating how your body is dealing with stress. There's also different categories of medication for symptoms of depression and anxiety, which is a hot button topic for anybody that's going through that. There are more experimental treatments that are being looked at this point, especially for immediate trauma. What I mean is, if someone has just experienced something, it's been shown that, now to use a different term, beta blockers, which is another one that affects your nervous system, your blood pressure, your heart rate, things like that, that high doses can actually kind of stunt the natural physical responses that happen during a traumatic situation. So we, in theory, can block PTSD before it happens. Obviously, it's way too late for her for that, and I'm so sorry. The point being, you know, this would be a combination situation. You don't just look at talk therapy. You also look at potential medications to help manage things. But once again, not in a situation where I'm mandating that, just pointing out that the two modalities work better together than alone.
Well, then we reach the point in our episode where we take all of your treatment possibilities and we put them to the test. So what happens when Jessica Jones ends up on Dr. Issues' couch?
Well, hello, Miss Jones. What can I do for you today?
You can f*** right off is what you can do.
Ooh, this is going to be intense.
You don't know the meaning of intense.
Okay, I know you've had tragedies.
That's a f***ing understatement.
And yet, here you are.
It was this or the raft. I didn't even kill the cop. I just broke his arm. He wouldn't stop f***ing touching me.
Okay, it sounds like there's been a lot of destruction in your path, but did you really mean to do all that?
It happens to me whether I wanted to or not.
Then, I mean, how do you shake it off?
Booze helps.
Well, booze masks.
I don't do masks.
Well, no, you keep the same face no matter what, but that doesn't make it less of a mask.
Real fucking deep there, Doc.
Well, you don't seem like a superficial person. All right, so do me a favor, okay? Look, you can use all the foul language, you know, all that stuff, but come on. You have it all in the dictionary, but can you give me something deeper?
My boot's gonna end up deep in your ass if you keep this up.
Okay, you know what? You know what? You're right. Stronger than I am, okay? Sounds like you have all that figured out. You're a professional, okay? Let me ask you this. If you were investigating yourself, what would you get?
Superpowered shit show with the husband strong enough to handle me and our daughter. I don't deserve either one of them.
Whoa. Do they know that's how you feel?
That's a pretty fucked up thing to say to someone.
Then why do you say it to yourself all the time?
You've no goddamn right.
Okay, look. Don't get me wrong. You don't have to answer me. But you do have to answer to them.
If it wouldn't put me in the raft, I'd smack the smug off your goddamn face. And I'm considering it just to get away from you.
Look, I have no intention of forcing you, okay? My door is always open.
You know what, Doc? For once, we agree on something. I hope you still have some of that Tony money left over because they've just been doing bang-up damage to your office week after week.
Yeah, it's kind of like Xavier's school at this point, you know? Just destroy and rebuild, destroy and rebuild. Yeah. At least it wasn't my face.
Yes, this is true. You got away easy this time. I don't know that you're going to get away so easy next week when we discuss Rorschach from Watchmen. That's going to be a fascinating and fun episode.
Well, it saves me from using some of my own cards, I guess.
Well, there you go. So that's going to about wrap it up. As I said, next week's episode is Rorschach, and in 2 weeks, we've got our special Infinity War episode that comes out April 25th. Our new episodes drop Wednesday mornings. You can catch us on our website, capesonthecouch.live. We're distributed through the Libsyn Network. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and YouTube. And we've got a Twitter account, Capes on the Couch. We've got a Facebook page, and you can email us, capesonthecouch@gmail.com. If you have any questions that you want us to answer about Rorschach, or in particular Thanos for the big upcoming Infinity War episode. And if you like what you hear, please subscribe and leave us a positive review with some good comments, and maybe we'll even read them on the show. So, Doc, anything you want to add before we leave?
Well, I know at some point the world will ask us to save them, and I will whisper, only for my usual price.
I don't think that's the line, but we'll go with it. So for Doc Issues, I'm Anthony Sitko. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Capes on the Couch podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Dr. Issues is a psychiatrist, but he is not your psychiatrist and does not have knowledge of your individual situation. For any personal mental health concerns, please consult your own healthcare providers. For medical emergencies, please call 911 or the designated number in your area immediately. Remember that you are not alone and help is out there.